We always like to hear that this conference call is being recorded, so welcome this evening to our call. Before we begin, I'd like to open up the floor to anyone who might have a question if you would like to come on the line, let's start with discussion. I'm hearing names that I'm recognizing. We're having some wonderful people join us this evening. Hi, Lynette. Anybody who's got a question about self-esteem as we've been discussing it for the last 2 weeks, because we're going to go into a very interesting place this evening. I'm going to do my very best. Lincoln and I have been working on this afternoon, as you team, for the sixth quality of an intentional creator. We're putting the finishing touches on that, and sometimes Lincoln just sits here in the office and says, Dave, and start exploring what I've learned through 3,000 hours of coaching, and we pull all that information together, and we find some pieces that are really important for everyone, and we're going to share some of that with you this evening. We have spent the last 2 weeks on self-esteem. We talked about some of the major causes of self-esteem in the first week, and then we talked about the need to be real and genuine and authentic and letting go of the need to impress and pretend and feel ashamed and fear, to be whole and to be complete so that we can show up in the service of other people. Last week I gave you several things that you can do to work through this process of improving self-esteem, and we talked about connecting with people, using your intrinsic validation from quality number one, and how we use our minds to create, that we're staying away from catastrophe and fantasy, from quality number two, using our mind, those five considered ideas. Number three was taking action. As Og says in Scroll 9, that only action turns that lion of terror to an ant of equanimity, and sometimes fear is at the foundation of some of our self-esteem issues. Number four was just stillness, and we did that exercise at the end of the first session where we were just still, and we stepped back from these thought processes and discovered that we are beyond these thoughts. We can quiet them, and we're still here. What a wonderful discovery. And lastly, the affirmations that we have created for you to assist in taking on these thought processes. Now, I want to take you to another place tonight, a little deeper. I said last week that these are the five ways in which you can overcome self-esteem. And Lincoln approached me after. He said, Dave, you know, I think it would be helpful if you went just a little bit deeper. If you could break this down into a little bit more simple terms so everybody could truly understand some of these challenges in self-esteem, so that you can hear them when they're happening, so that as you're consciously overcoming them, you know what you're addressing. So I'm going to do my very best. Lincoln's going to join me tonight. He's got some questions he wants to ask, and I will begin with an introduction to this topic, and then I'll invite him to give some guidance to this discussion, and as he's doing so, I invite anyone who's on the phone to do likewise. This can be a very rich conversation. If there's something specifically about self-esteem that has challenged you, or you've been thinking about, or you've been concerned about, ask it so that we can go into more detail. We are not absent the answers and solutions to this. Sometimes we don't always know what's happening specifically in your life. I can pull from my own experience debriefing assessments. But, oh, it's so rich when you come on the line and share thoughts or concerns that you're dealing with on a daily basis. So pull out your pencils and pens. Let's take some notes tonight, because where we're going to go is in the gap that occurs between our public self. This is Stephen Covey's conversation, our public self, our private self, and our secret self. There is generally, in most people, a gap between how they present themselves in public and how they live their lives in secret. The presence of this gap is a great contributor to self-esteem. I mentioned unmet expectations, childhood traumas, relationship issues. Those can lead to this conflict between between what we present to the world and what we're thinking about ourselves and our life, what our secret desires are, etc., inside. So I want us to go into this gap tonight, if you're willing to go here with me. This can be a painful place to go. It's just to shed light, because it's been my experience that when we shed that light, it's not nearly as fearful or as uncomfortable, and we can see it for what it is. And if you can step back with me tonight and let us look at what's in that secret place, you may be able to begin the process of healing so that that secret self and that public self become one and the same. We are how we appear. You get what you see. This is who I am. There's no differences. There's no games. There's no facades. I am real, genuine, and authentic. That's how we'll want to become. Now, all of us have a bit of a gap. I do. We're all attempting to become that whole and complete person. What I do know is as we get closer to narrowing that gap, the more confidence that we do have, the more comfort we have with ourselves and our own skin, the more comfort we have in having a conversation with another human being. So it's not all or nothing. It's a gradual process, and as it's occurring, we actually experience an increase in comfort. So let's go into this process. I want to share with you one of the contributors, and it's the way we've been raised in a society. I know that when I went to school, and many of you have much more education than I have, if you've got a PhD in psychology, for an example, which I do not have, you are specialized in this field. If you are a professional mason, and you do rock work and brick work, and you gain the expertise for doing that, plumbing, electrical, technical skills in terms of auto repair, whatever it might be, specialized knowledge in a specific area of your life. And by the way, I've heard housewives say, well, all I was is a housewife. I thought, man, they ran this mini corporation with all of these little kids, ran a budget, got a house clean, had to work overtime every single day and rarely got paid for it. That is a great specialized set of information. There, housewives, moms, can be some of the greatest networkers in the world because they know so much about the pain that people are suffering in their lives. So whatever your specialized knowledge is, put that over here on your left hand. So in your left hand, if you could just hold all of your specialized knowledge. Now, we can have someone who becomes a brain surgeon, and they've got specialized knowledge about how all the brain functions, and they can go in and remove tumors without causing serious brain challenges. Over here on the right-hand side is this secret self, this person that we live with, this person we're with when we're alone, this person who's with us when we're on the Internet alone or watching television alone, or in a strange city alone, that secret self. Okay, we have a little noise in the background. If you could just press *6, because I have not muted out the group. We want everyone to be able to participate. So if there's anything happening in the background, if you could just press *6, that's great. And when you want to come off, just press *6. And anytime you want to talk to me, just say, Dave, 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 and I will acknowledge you as soon as I hear you. So just press *6 if you can, if there's any noise in the background. Okay, so we have this specialized knowledge in our left hand, and we have this secret self over here in our right hand. Have you ever wondered why someone with such specialized knowledge can have such a screwed up life? How someone with such specialized knowledge, even a marriage and family counselor, could be on their third marriage in their secret life, their private life? Because something's happening over here that hasn't been addressed. These are two different places. Education, age, do not equate to maturity. I said that 2 weeks ago. What is the highest level of maturity is being real and genuine and authentic. Having this outside the world sees and this inside that we see being the same person. So just know that we've been raised in a society where we separate these two. You happen to be in a business where they cannot be separated. you've heard me say this many times when I've spoken, that this business will fillet you wide open. Lincoln asked me today, what does that mean? What does it mean to be filleted wide open? What it means is to expose the gap between our private, secret desires and our public self. In this business, there are two options, and this is very sensitive. I'm even going to mention the first one. There are and have been at times, it's one of the reasons why this business can have a taint. There have been some who have a very disgusting secret life and a very superior facade, who have been successful in this business because they can look someone in the eye and sell them, regardless of their concern for the person or the value of the product being sold. They can just do that. They want the money, and they can act like they care. Now, in psychology, we call that an antisocial personality. It's a liar. You don't want to be that. The very fact that you have conflict is good news. It means you're not an antisocial personality. You're not a liar. You just have conflict. There may be some things going on in your secret self that you want to root out. But the very fact that you're feeling as if you've been filleted wide open, exposed to the world, is great news. You've got a soul. And this business fillets you wide open and shines a big spotlight inside. And in every single one of us, there are some things that it shows that we may not be proud of. Oh, what a wonderful opportunity in this business to become one and the same, whole and complete, real, genuine, and authentic. People can discern it. You know they can. You can feel what they're feeling. And to be there to truly love them, to truly serve them, to truly bring abundance into their life. And I know a number of you people and the jobs in which you have, the companies that you're with, the professions you've selected, and to a person, you have products that would allow you to do that. To be the person who brings abundance into the life of another person and have that truly be your desire in your soul. So that's where we're headed tonight. How can we identify what's going on here and narrow the gap? Because again, as it becomes narrower and narrower, the more comfortable we come with ourselves, the more comfortable we come with others, the better we can serve. The more joy we experience, the more success is ours. So that's where we're heading. Now, before we go there, any questions?
Dave?
Hello?
Dave, this is Lincoln. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Lincoln.
You had talked earlier about we've been spending the last couple of weeks on self-esteem, and that we had talked, and you were going to try and break it down a little bit more. And one of the questions I have is, how does this gap affect self-esteem?
How does this gap self-esteem cause self-esteem or create self-esteem challenges? I believe that when we've got a soul, when we're uncomfortable, it's because there is a knowledge, there is a knowingness in our being, and I believe every human being has this capacity, that something isn't right. Something just isn't quite right. And it's that guilt or shame that creates this confusion, this sense of duplicity, where knowing we're being double-minded, it makes us uncomfortable. Because in this business of networking and direct selling, when we're in this space, we have to show up. We have to show up. A facade's not good enough. You can be a facade in some other professions, but not in this one. Your heart and soul is on the line for the life of another person who's depending on you to guide them with their dreams. And if you've got duplicity going on, some confusion going on, then that's going to impact our self-esteem, that doubt, that fear. Now, how this impacts your business is that all of a sudden you walk out and you start to talk to this person and you start to speak something, and something inside of you says, that's not true. We might, for an example, try to impress them that we have more knowledge than we have. Or we might try to pretend that we're having greater success than we're having. Inside our soul, we know what is true. And the conflict between what we know is true and what we're trying to project creates fear. It creates, well, I shared this a couple weeks ago. On our face, we have 2 to the power of 200 minus 1. That's millions, if not billions, of facial expressions. We also know that no matter how hard we try to conceal that discomfort inside our soul, that it leaks out on our face. It just does. It leaks out on our face. You can't stop it. You can't control all millions of combinations of muscles in your face. You just can't do it. And the person who is experiencing you has a thing, neurons called mirror neurons in their amygdala, in their fight or flight center, that are picking up these signals. They're non-visual. They're not being processed by your optic center. They're being processed by your amygdala, where it's feeling a fear or anxiety, and as a result, it is sending fear dendrites up into this person's prefrontal cortex. It's sending cortisol into their body. They're feeling uncomfortable. And these mirror neurons are reading these facial expressions at twice the speed of a normal neuron. So before that person has a conscious thought, I've shared this with you before, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but before that person has a conscious thought, they're already having feelings that are making them uncomfortable. And as a result, there is a crisis of trust. Crisis of trust. You ever ask, how did... It's like they knew I was in networking before I asked the question. How can that be? Because it's written all over your face. Not that you're in networking, but there is something you're uncomfortable trying to share. You're uncomfortable. The way you're sharing it, the way you're posturing yourself, the way you're trying to pretend or trying to impress or trying to hide your fear or anxiety is written all over your face. It's leaked on your face. The mirror neurons have read it. Your body, their body has reacted. They're feeling uncomfortable. They don't know why. They just know that they can't trust you. They can't trust you. So we want to make sure that what is happening in our secret life is consistent with the message that we're sharing, that we're being real and genuine and authentic, because when we are, those mirror neurons pick up a different message. We're safe. A person feels comfortable. They are attracted to us. This is one of the great features of the law of attraction, that they are literally attracted to us. They're comfortable. They're drawn to us. And we have the opportunity to share things differently than anyone else who's not real and genuine and authentic. It's half of the law of attraction. I felt inspired to tell you the other half because I just got off the phone with an amazing human being who had been in a business with two of my good friends and had dropped out of the business for about 4 years, and all of a sudden woke up one day and felt really impressed. She wanted to be in a business with a specific kind of product that was important to her, and she wished that these two people were still in business. And she kind of put it out to the universe. And she came home one day after a trip. She'd been gone for a while. She pulled into her house, and there he was on the phone. Call me. I've been thinking about you. So she called him and said, oh, man, are you? I just wish you were in the business and we had a product like X. And he said, I am, and we have it. She says, I'm in. That was it. That's the law of attraction, a power greater than both of them who brought them together because they had a shared desire. That power knew both of them. That's the other half of the law of attraction. But this critical piece you absolutely can control by being real and genuine, authentic. This first piece of not exciting someone's mirror neurons to send negative messages and creating discomfort in a person's life. We want to create trust. To create trust in another person, we must be able to trust ourselves and then be worthy as a result of trust. So we're going to go into that for a moment. I hope that answered your question, Lincoln. Kind of a long answer, but we're getting into this measurement now and saying, do I trust myself or do I not trust myself? Lincoln, any comments before I proceed?
No, that was great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so here we are, taking a look at inside our lives. Now, there are some things we want to specifically look for. The single greatest challenge between our public self and private self in the business shared by the majority of those on this call is fantasy. It's a secret desire to be wealthy enough to finally be above all of the stress and pain and frustration. This is the single greatest cause of a duplicity, a double-mindedness, a difference between our internal, private, secret self and our public self. We present ourselves as caring, and we really want to, but secretly when we're by ourselves, lying in our bed at night, our thoughts are not about lives that we're changing. It's about cars that we're buying, houses that we're living in, trips that we're taking, Lear jets that we're buying, etc., or security that we desire, or debt that we want to get paid off. Where is our mind when there is no one around and we're left to our own devices, to our own secret desires? So the very first thing you're going to shed light on this next week is, what is my secret desire? My secret desire. What do I really want? Am I in the business of lifting and building people and blessing lives as I say I am? Do I really care about people? If money were taken out of the equation, would I spend another day on this project? Do I really care about people? Do I really care about how my products can bless the lives of those people? Do I really care? Ask yourself that question and say, wow, have I been fantasizing about having enough money to get above it all? Because as I've shared with you before, that place called ease, where there's no more stress and pain, and there's plenty of time, freedom to do whatever I want to and money to buy whatever I want to, does not exist on this planet. Doesn't exist. Doesn't happen. There's no such place. People with trust funds have stress. Stress is part of life. The successful people, as I've shared before, that I know have acquired an enormous ability to handle large amounts of stress. They do it so well that the more stress they handle, the more they have. So if you want more in life, don't fantasize about escaping it. Become the person who can handle it. So fantasy is the single biggest challenge. The next is often conditioned by life, and often starting with our parents. It's catastrophe. It's the other side of that equation. It's worst case scenarios. It's when we're in our private moments, our thoughts are about something terrible happening. If we can't see our child for a moment, they drown in the bathtub. Now, I want to comment. There may be someone on the phone who's lost a child. It only takes one real worst case scenario to have us spend endless hours in this place. And I do not mean to offend anyone who may have suffered a great loss. I just use that as an example. That if someone doesn't get home right at midnight, if you've got a teenager, you're calling the hospitals and the highway patrol for fear they've had a terrible accident. Well, maybe someone in your life at one time did. But now your thought process goes there every time something doesn't fit right. What happens in terms of the economy? What happens in terms of being able to pay your mortgage payment? Og calls it tormenting myself over events that may never come to pass. Tormenting myself for events that may never come to pass. It's the second most significant contributor to this secret self that is duplicitous, double-minded, because we act in public as though everything's okay. But inside we're tormented, ripped apart by all of this horrible thought processes. The next one is shame. The third one is shame. Shame generally comes from behavior that we know is inappropriate. Some of those things could include alcohol addiction, drug addiction, gambling addiction, sex addiction, food addiction. We may have done something in secret that is in conflict with our belief systems. Now, let me show you how the world tries to solve this. The world tries to help justify all of that behavior so that we shouldn't feel guilty about it. I still believe that deep down in our souls, we know. I was in the most interesting conversation this last weekend with a dear friend who's now 72 days sober. I mean, it's such a glorious thing to have this person back in our lives, whole in the sense that he's being so real. And I asked him, what's different this time? What did you do different this time? Because 10 years ago, he got sober for 3 years. And then we lost him for 7. And he said, I finally gave up. And I said, well, tell me more about that. I finally gave up. I gave up fighting. I gave up resisting and resenting and rebelling and finally surrendered to the truth. What was the truth for him? The truth was that he was a damaged and broken, scared to death little child. Ike was crying when he told me this because I had felt so drawn to him. He had been so attractive as a human being for the last 72 days. So amazing. He never knew that his strength was in being so real and so vulnerable and so authentic, so genuine. He did not know that was where his strength was. He was trying to be the tough guy. And I mean, he was beater shirt, growth and long hair and a baseball cap. And you say two words and he'd knock the crap out of you. He was always in trouble. Tons of DUIs, in and out of jail, all kinds of stuff going on. He was the tough guy. That's how he hid his fear. That's how he dealt with his shame. Was by alcohol. Well, he finally decided one day he didn't want to die because he was chasing the illusion to the gates of hell and even unto death that he could drink one drink. He never could. He couldn't stop till he passed out. That was a lot of shame for him. Then all of a sudden the light gets shown on it and he finds out that it's so interesting to hear him talk to the family. There's no big bravado and bragging about all the stuff he does. He's just so honest about where he's been and what he's been doing. It is so amazing to listen to. Such a kind, wonderful human being with such gifts and talents, which are all now coming to the surface again. So shame is a huge thing. Shame comes from the root word sham. Anybody has ever decorated a bed knows what a pillow sham is. A sham is a covering you put over the pillow. Shame is a covering we put over our genius. We put over our authenticity. We put over our realness. It blocks everything out. It keeps us from being real and genuine and authentic. So if you've got any of that, just put a light on it just for a moment. Just for a moment, I'm going to ask you the questions, and you just answer them to yourself. When I'm alone on the internet, where do I go? And if people who I work with in the business saw me here, what would they think? If I'm married, what would my spouse think? If my spouse knows that I've had that problem and I continue to have it, what would it cost me if they caught me again? Some on the phone may be saying, it already has cost me. I've had the privilege of working with some people who have already lost relationships or that addiction. Now, the world would tell you it's no big deal. It's just the body who's getting over. There is so much research on this, I won't bore you with it tonight. I've talked to you about it before, the chemistry in the brain and pornography addiction. The studies are coming in all over the place. The physiological actual shifts and changes in the brain by those who get addicted to pornography. There isn't a woman on this phone who's had a relationship with a man addicted to pornography. He doesn't know the rest of it. One, the feelings of I'm less than. Why am I not enough? Especially if a woman is feeling less than. You have a couple children, the body changes, I don't look like an airbrush model anymore. Does he not love me? Am I not satisfying him? Do I not excite him? Oh, if there's anybody on this phone struggling with this addiction, shed some light on it for what it is. It's not something you just quit. Sometimes we need to get into a 12-step program for sex addiction and start the process of healing, of rebuilding trust in relationships, of literally giving time for the pleasure centers of your brain, which have been shrunk by the addiction, to again take their full size and start to feel the craving released in the brain. This is a very real addiction. Alcohol. I know very few alcoholics who, before they finally faced their alcoholism, believe they just could control it. It's no big deal. I don't drink every night. When you do, can you stop it? Do you just have a beer with your barbecue in the backyard on Saturday? Or does it turn into two, and then three, and then four, and then five? Do you ever drink alone? Do you ever find yourself locked in a room? Do you hide your alcohol somewhere? Have you ever had a DUI or afraid you might get one? Have you ever been fired from a job? Have you ever been threatened? Have you ever acted out when you're inebriated? Just ask yourself these questions. Because if we have this deep secret, and it's inconsistent with what we're sharing in the public, it is impossible to be real and genuine and authentic. We can't have it. So whatever your source of shame is, it could be food, anorexia, bulimia. Now, I'm not a therapist. I don't want to even suggest that I am. I will tell you, if you're struggling with these things, get into the hands of a professional as quickly as possible so that you can begin to heal, because with that secret going on, and sometimes those secrets start to become evidence in our physical appearance, and people know more than we think they know. Sometimes we're the last one to know that everybody already does know. Matter of fact, I remember being in a seminar once, and the very first activities they had us all wander around, and then the facilitator had us stop and stand in front of a person, and I stopped and stood in front of this young man. And then the facilitator said, I want you to tell the person in front of you your deepest, darkest secret. And I went, there's no way in the world. I'm not going to do that. That's crazy. So I said, you go first. And he said, okay, I'll go first. And he said, I'm a drug addict. Well, I'm looking at a guy who's about 5'11 and 135 pounds, who's got long, scraggly hair and emaciated features. And I'm going, well, tell me something I don't know. And that's when I got the point of the exercise. We think that secrets are secrets, and most of the time they're written literally in our physical body, and if not, they're written on our face. And we wonder why we have trouble in relationships establishing trust. Let us put a light on these addictions. Gambling's another one. Oh, there's so much money that's lost in homes by people that are addicted to gambling. Get some assistance. And take on these illnesses. They're illnesses. Some of them absolutely physiologically impact the body and the brain and require healing. And if there's anyone on the phone who has someone who's in an addiction like this and is seeking recovery, be the safe place for them. You may need to go to Al-Anon meetings. You may be codependent yourself. There may be challenges in ways we can contribute to some of these things. Let us be a party to the recovery, so that everybody can be that these are the major issues for this duplicity in our life, this secretness. If we've had, when we talk about sex, we talk about infidelity. There's very few things that are more burdensome in a person's life than to be in a committed relationship and have a lie about whether or not we are committed in terms of intimacy. It's going to be very difficult carrying that shame. Now I'm going to go somewhere really dangerous, and forgive me if I offend, it's not intended to offend. I just believe there's a power greater than me. And I believe that part of that power and that role of that power is to take that burden from me. To take that burden from me. One of the great gifts you learn as you begin to practice being a partner with that power and bringing abundance to the lives of others and serving others, that a multitude of sins, if you will, where we've missed the mark, are forgiven. I'm going to share with you my understanding of one of the most sacred parts of my life. I was a black sheep. A black sheep. Some things that I'd done in my life, especially when I was a teenager, just haunted me for years. And although I had dealt with them in appropriate ways for my belief system, they still were there. And I learned a couple powerful lessons. I share them in the section on Quality 1, Connecting with People, Awakening Empathy and Intuition, that when we have this kind of a burden, this kind of a secret that we are keeping from someone else we love, that would absolutely devastate that person if they knew, that we can take that burden and put it at the feet or altar, if you will, of that great power and ask it to please take that burden from you. And I promise you that it can and will. Now, it's not our mission to forget the burden. We can be relieved of it. My case, I refer to that as my Lord Jesus Christ, my Savior. To place that burden at his feet, at his altar, so that I can be forgiven. But I don't want to forget. Some people try to forget. We don't want to forget. We want to remember what it felt like when we had that burden. We want to remember what it felt like when we were having that pain. Not so that it weighs us down, but so that we can use it as a resource when we're connecting with another human being. We're now talking to someone, and we're listening carefully to what they say, and we hear something. We go, wow, I wonder if, and we ask them a question that perhaps only we would know to ask, because we're being so honest about our own pain in with ourselves. We've owned it. We've engraved it on our heart. It's become part of our own character, and we ask the question, and someone says, oh, finally someone understands my pain. They understand what I'm going through. And you can see them start to heal. And there has been purpose then in your suffering. Purpose in your pain. You're not carrying the burden. It's not in a sack that you're dragging behind you any longer. It's now engraved on your heart as a resource to serve other people. That's where we want to get it. But some of you tonight are carrying burdens. And it is at the core of your self-esteem challenge. Because the shame that comes with that burden causes conflict between you trying to be real in public, presenting yourself, and what you really know to be true inside. So shed some light on that. Have the courage to place this burden at the altar of that power that governs abundance. Then have the courage to engrave the memory on your heart and use it to serve other people. There can be purpose in your suffering. You can bless other people's lives because of your own experience. I'm not going to get into a discussion of whether you tell those things to your spouse. That would be something you'd want to deal with someone in an ecclesiastical position or a therapist. I don't give that advice. But I do know the burden can be lifted. So we want to be able to shed light on these pieces, knowing that if we have them in our lives, it's going to be hard to feel good about ourselves. If, for an example, we're dealing with a secret alcohol problem, we probably will overcompensate by the way we handle ourselves in public. We will try to impress people and pretend. It's making us feel better about ourselves because there's something inside we feel awful about or something that we fear. For this person that I talked to, he shared something with me that just moved my soul. When he said that he just felt like a broken, scared to death little child inside, that's how he felt. We started to explore it in more detail, and this is what we found. That when he goes to share his thoughts, he gets tongue-tied. Is there anybody on the phone like that? That they go to speak, and he has such negative comments inside his head about himself, about his worthiness, about his goodness, about his gifts and talents. But what's happening is his body is releasing cortisol and pheodendrites, the cortisol shutting down his hippocampus, his memory center. He can't speak fluidly. Everything he would say is locked in a vault. And the only way he could find to unlock that vault was to drink. So he'd have a few drinks to loosen up, and pretty soon he was addicted to it, and it became an obsessive addiction. If we've got a fear about connecting with people, and our mouth is closed, we know that the challenge is that I'm focusing on me. That's why the first step in overcoming shame and fear is to start focusing on other people. That's why that's the first thing we do. We start looking for what's good in them, what's important to them, and then we just verbalize it. We just do that till we get a little bit more comfortable and a little bit more comfortable and a little bit more comfortable. Then we start listening for doors. And we hear one, then we step into their world. Tell me more about that. First couple times a person does that, their brain's going to freeze. What do I do next? What was it Dave said on that tape? Oh, my goodness, I can't remember. That's when you say to someone, I'm just listening. I just want to understand where you are. And you just stay as calm as you can, as peaceful as you can, shutting off this fear, knowing that every time you take action, you're reducing those flutters in your heart. You're turning that lion of terror into an ant of equanimity, a peace of mind. What a great thing to know. So we have these, we're shedding the light. So the first message for tonight, the very first message, is that we're going to want to shed a light on what's going on in the secret self. Fantasy, catastrophe, shame, fear. What's creating the shame? Have I been viewing internet pornography? Have I been unfaithful? Have I been involved in alcohol or drugs or gambling? A sex addiction, food addiction? What is my shame? What's creating that? And many of those may require professional intervention. And making the decision, I'm going to surrender, as did my dear friend. I'm going to give up trying to pretend that's not there. Trying to impress and overcompensate for that being there. I'm going to stop doing that. I'm going to let go. I'm tired of holding up this facade. I'm tired of pretending I'm this person. I'm going to finally give in, give up, and just be real. Very first thing you'll find is people will be attracted to you. It's beautiful. And two, you'll finally have the light shed on the issue and can begin the process of healing the cause. And I've shared with you the most common of those causes. Let's pause just for a moment. Lincoln, let's turn to you first. Do you have any comments or questions from your list following that discussion?
Yes. You told me earlier today that you can remember the very first time you woke up or realized that you loved people, truly loved people. And a corollary to that is a question, how did that impact your life and business, that realization?
This was a real revelation, and Lincoln, I wasn't sure we were going to go there tonight, but I guess I will. I'll be very transparent, and we'll go pretty deep. I'm pretty open about the fact that when I was 2 to 4 that I was put in the hands of a pedophile. and that created some real self-esteem issues, shame and guilt and discomfort and secretness and stuff that carried through a lifetime. When that's the case, we pull into a cocoon. Now, I played football in high school. I was an all-conference linebacker, but I always felt alone. I did not know that I was any good until the day I was announced that I was on the first team all-conference. This makes sense, does it? When I was in college, I felt alone. I always felt alone. Anybody feel like that? Like you're kind of in your own little world and you step out there to connect with people and talk to people. It's not your favorite place to be. You'd rather be in here. That's where I was. And as my heart started to be cut out in 1988 and 89, because the way I compensated for this is I became wealthy. I became a workaholic. I became, well, we had the biggest house on the hill. Well, there was one bigger one down the street, but on the top of Alzada Drive and Mount Helix in California, you know, with the tennis court and the swimming pool and the beautiful home on a couple of acres of ground. I drove a Ferrari, a Mercedes, a Corvette. We had the, you know, the place up at in the mountains. We had, you know, all that stuff. I was my stuff. I was my Rolex watch. I was all that stuff. Because that's what I did to compensate for how I was feeling inside about myself. Now, that's a crummy reason to work really hard and build a business. Because if anything happens, as did with me, when that was all lost, I was lost. I was back to that scared little worthless child. Just worthless. I remember driving away from our house in that Ryder truck with just tears pouring down my eyes. Because all that I was driving away from. What am I going to do now? And going through the process of learning the principles that we now share, the six qualities of an intentional creator, the insights I've gotten from studying Og Scrolls, it's going through that journey that we learn to see the good in another person, what's important to them. I'm going to say it again. Then verbalizing it. Then listening for doors. These are principles that I was taught line upon line, precept upon precept, to help me get out of my cocoon. I promised God that if He would reveal to me the truth, I would spend the rest of my life teaching it to others so they could get out of their darkness quicker. How's that sound? That's the truth. So that they could get out of their darkness quicker. I'd pay the price to get out. Then I would spend the rest of my life helping people get out of that darkness quicker. That's why my mission is healing torn bodies and torn minds. And I did discover those principles. And I remember the day, I could still remember the day, standing in my bathroom, looking in the mirror, and going, David, you really do love people. It was the first realization that I loved people. The realization that came before that I did not share with Lincoln, was waking up in the middle of the night one night and watching Ramona breathe, just watching her breathe, and realizing that this human being, I mean, we have seven children at this point. I've got all the outward appearances of being a great father and loving her with all my heart, but I was in my own selfish cocoon most of that time. I came out, did my part. But that night I saw her breathing, and I knew that I loved her with all of my soul. That all of my commitment, all of my trust, all of my intimacy was wrapped up in this beautiful human being. And I was so excited to discover I loved somebody. Anybody been there? Anybody hungering, pretending like they have been, but really haven't felt that in the core of their soul, that they really love this person? They would sacrifice their life for them. They would serve them. Because it wasn't too long after that I had the realization that I loved people. I love people. I can tell you at that moment there was a switch that was flipped. A peace that came. Comfort, a connection with that power that governs abundance. And I'm telling you, if you'd like to have that, if you don't have it, study these six qualities of an intentional creator and apply these principles in your life, and you will have it. That's the promise. These are the steps I took to get out of my dark cocoon to reach that point. Because I can promise you, if you have never reached it, there's a whole world out beyond that, a whole world, a magnificent world of being able to love and serve people, to bring abundance into their lives. And when you do, doors open. Lincoln was in a meeting this afternoon. Lincoln, was it an amazing meeting? Oh, it's a dream of a lifetime to bring Og into a place to help people in the recovery of alcoholism. Millions of people. It was almost magical the way it came together, because that's what happens when you're out into that peace. That's when the law of attraction can actually come into your life. One, that when you step out and you're talking, people can feel that what you're saying and who you are is who you really are. They can be comfortable with you. That's one. Two, the power that governs abundance can start connecting you with other people who need what you have and have what you need. It's magical. It's wonderful. But it's all outside of this duplicity between this shame and fear that's going on inside this fantasy and trying to escape and avoid the rigors of life and catastrophizing all the time and then trying to look like you're okay and feeling unsure and uncomfortable and a lack of confidence. As you bring these closer together by intrinsic validation, stepping into the worlds of others, noticing them, drawing you closer and closer to your outside appearance and your inside person, and all of a sudden one day you actually notice a person differently than you've ever noticed them before. You see why pornography is so deadly, because it's just the antithesis of that. It's objectification of human beings, period. All of a sudden you notice a human being. You see them breathing. They've got a life, they've got dreams, they've got hopes. And all you want to do is help them get them. And one day you'll look in the mirror and you'll say, oh man, I love people, I can't believe it, this is so exciting, I actually love people. And then the world starts to open up, and the universe with it. Lincoln, back to you.
One of the things that we talk about, Dave, is this idea of objectification and how in this particular, in network marketing especially, it's tough to build leaders when we do that. I just thought if you could address that a little bit, that'd be great.
Thank you. Yeah, in the conversation, we were talking specifically about pornography addiction, but money addiction, anything that keeps us focused on ourselves inside this cocoon where we're feeling some shame, or we want to escape from reality. We want that money so that we don't have to deal with people anymore. We want to buy that tropical island so we can tell people to go to hell because we're sick and tired of people. I just want to have enough money not to have to deal with that anymore. And then we're trying to act like I care about you and et cetera. What happens is people go out into the world to recruit, and there's a kind of an uncomfortable feeling that happens. But should you break through the uncomfortable and actually sign them up, the evidence is that we don't spend time building them, training them, teaching them. They're just a nuisance. I spend all my time with them, and they're just draining my energy and sucking out my energy, and good grief, I feel like I'm pushing a rope. I can tell you right now, if you've got those feelings, you may want to really look and shed a light on that inside thing of what is your secret desire. When you got in this business and staying in this business, what is it that you fantasize about that you want most? Is it 5,000 people who have a beautiful castle that they all live in? Or is it that you just want to get your castle and it's going to take 5,000 people to do it? And your castle's going to be so big, and it's going to be on such a big mountain, it's going to have such a big moat or such a big cliff that nobody's going to be bugging you and causing any frustration. You're going to be free to do whatever you darn well please. Is that where you are? Because if your people are driving you crazy, that's the litmus test. There's a very good chance that that little secret thing is going on inside there. Because those who love people serve them without question. They take them where they are and they build them from there. They don't create an expectation that person's going to generate money for them in the next week. And some of them get smart enough not to recruit someone who's too far away from leadership because they don't want to have to dedicate that much time. They love people enough not to promise that they will and not deliver. So they're looking for people who are more of a leader to start with. And they're a little bit more discriminating in who they recruit because they don't want to let a person down. They make a promise, they keep it because they love people. They love to see people grow. So the objectification, pornography leads to this. A desire for just money leads to this. Evidenced by how we treat the people we have brought into the business. Are we serving them willingly, excitedly? If not, maybe there's just a little duplicity there that we'll want to take a look at. Because it would help us to be whole and complete and real and genuine and authentic. Not only can we love people, we will actually train them better, inspire them more, and we will be living examples of the kind of person they'll want to become. They don't want to become like a mentor or an upline that is just focused on money, and they can tell. They can absolutely tell. You can tell. You know. They don't want to be like that. So you can't inspire them to be like you if you are like that. And you don't want to be like that. And I'm not suggesting anybody in this phone is. You just don't want to be like that. You want to be the person they want to become so they can become like you and then help their people become like them. So objectification, whatever that secret desire is or that secret shameful act, that might cause us to treat people like objects, even though we're pretending like we care. Back to you, Lincoln. We only have 2 minutes. My goodness, where did the time go? It's 7:58. Let's just open up. Is there anyone on the phone who's got a question they'd like us to address before we end this session? Come on the line if there is. I hope this has been helpful because this is where you go, and I can promise you one of two things will happen. You either willingly go here and shine light on it and deal with it and overcome it, and I've given you the 5 ways to do that: intrinsic validation, taking action, using your mind constructively, studying your affirmations, those things, those 5 steps I gave you last week. That's how you do it. But until you shed light on it and you see what it is, it's going to continue to fester inside your soul. And so long as it is, you're going to continue to struggle with self-esteem. You're going to continue to be filleted wide open and exposed, and you're continue to struggle in your business. I'm praying, that it's helpful for you to take a look at this piece in self-esteem so you know why you're focusing on people. You still may have a secret desire to have money. Just keep consciously saying, not going there today. I'm going to focus on people today, bringing abundance to their lives. I'm going to focus on keeping my mind in mental rehearsal, exploration, inspiration. Continually, if there's someone I can serve, put them on my path and I will serve them. That's where I'm going to spend my time. I'm going to get inspiration. I'm going to act on it. I'm going to serve people. I'm going to have a reaffirmation that that power knows me, trusts me. I trust it. And that relationship's going to start to develop. And the more of those experiences you have, the more those are real experiences. That's when joy comes, not counterfeit versions from norepinephrine and fantasy. This is real joy. This sweeps over your soul and drops you to your knees and causes you to cry with joy and fulfillment. That's what you want to experience. The more of these you have, the less desire you're going to have for those secret ones. If you have a companion, the more you focus on serving your companion, being 100% committed, being trustworthy and trusting, being intimate just with that person, and giving them all that you have, and keeping your eyes from wandering, the more love you'll feel, the more joy you'll feel, the less you'll want to go someplace else. That's why I share those things with you. That will help you overcome it. But identify it. Shed light on what it is for you. And see if you can find any one of those things we talked about. And start narrowing that gap so that you can feel more whole and complete, more real and genuine and authentic. Well, thanks, everybody, for being with us tonight.
Hey, Dave. Oh,
yes.
Dave, this is Shane. Hey, before we ended the call, when we were debriefing at your house a couple weeks ago, you had received an article, some studies about pornography and the effects on the mind, and I was going to get a copy from you to read to have maybe get a little insight on my 12- and 13-year-old scouts, and I left there and forgot that. Is it possible you could mail me one, maybe call me after this call or something, I'd give you my address?
Absolutely, and if anybody's got a question, just send an email to Lincoln at Ogmandino.com, and it will give you the address where you can get a copy. It's through the Lighted Candle Society. It's some recent brain research done by a neurosurgeon on pornography addiction, and I have that for you, Shane. I'll make sure that Ramona gets it off to you. I just had several copies delivered to me recently. You're welcome. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, well, everybody have a great week. Take on this piece, because we're saying, what has this got to do with my business? It has everything to do with your business. How you feel when you're picking up the phone, how you feel when you're talking to somebody. Be honest with yourself. Get into this space. Oh, I know where I was headed. I almost forgot. You got two options. You're either going to go there yourself, or I can promise you that power that governs abundance loves you enough to create a circumstance that will take you here. I can tell you it's a whole lot better to make this decision on your own than to be compelled to take a look. That power loves you enough not to let you waste your life living in a cocoon and in shame and fear, pretending and impressing. Something will happen that will humble you. Make the decision tonight to do it on your own. Go shed a light on it and make the conscious decision to change it. If that takes intervention, if that takes professional assistance, if that takes coaching, whatever it takes, take the action so that there can be a narrowing of this gap between this secret desire and this outward appearance that's in conflict with one another. Well, everybody have a great night. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you.